Back to My Garden, episode 51.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Attention, garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another episode of Back to My Garden. A tremendous guest today, folks. Alexandra Campbell is a writer, a passionate gardener, a blogger with a middle-sized walled garden. She describes it as bigger than a courtyard, but smaller than an acre. She loves to help other gardeners with her blog and her coaching. We want to welcome from Kent in the United Kingdom, Alexandra Campbell. Hi, Alexandra.
Hi there.
Welcome to the show. I've given our listeners a little introduction on you, but I want to hear your story, and I know our listeners want to get to know you better. Go ahead and take a minute or two and share with us a little bit about your background and how you got into gardening.
Well, I lived in a house in London, and that's London, England, for a long time with a tiny courtyard garden. And then we moved out to Kent, and we still live in a town, but the garden is a fifth of an acre, which is tiny for country gardens, but it is actually quite large for a town garden, which is why I call it middle-sized, because it's not really big or small. And the challenge I had when I got here as a totally inexperienced gardener was that it was a beautiful, beautifully designed, stocked garden, mature plants, beautifully looked after. There was really nothing wrong with it. So there was only one way it could go, which was downhill. And of course, the other problem is that gardens grow, which is something that out in my little tiny little plot in London, I hadn't really grasped. Because, of course, 6 weeks after we moved in, this beautiful garden was actually a kind of jungle, and there were vines chasing me down the path, and I just really felt like I didn't know how to cope with it. So I talked to people about it. I went on, you know, the odd one-day gardening course. I read books. I read magazines. But I still felt pretty overwhelmed. But the piece of information that I got that made all the difference was a horticultural friend of mine who said, just weed and mulch for the first year. Don't do anything more than that. And you don't have to do very much at a time. And I got really quite worried about things like, would I hurt my back with all the digging? And did I need to haul a wheelbarrow around? But actually, I used to go out there with a little fork and a trug, and I'd do about 15 minutes of weeding and mulching. And I went all the way around the garden that way. It probably took me a couple of months. And by the time I got to the end of that, I really knew it. You know, I'd been up close and personal with plants, and I sort of felt I'd managed to get some control over it. And I think that's when I became a gardener.
Wow. What an introduction. That's fantastic.
Yes. Well, the thing is that all these mature plants actually were probably quite close to the end of their life anyway. But my lack of expertise and a couple of very hot summers and really tough winters, actually quite a few of them died within my first few years. So I was then left with a sort of garden that was half what I'd inherited and half not. And after about 6 years, we did decide to completely redesign it, because I found it quite difficult to plant and maintain what was effectively someone else's garden. So finding your gardening voice, I think, is something that happens. And you shouldn't worry, you know, if you move into a new house or, you know, whatever, you shouldn't start thinking, oh God, I've got to make it mine. It's not like putting paint on a wall and taking, you know, and furnishing a house. It's just much harder to, because the plants have their own ideas about what they want to do. And so you just sort of, you know, muddle along with them for a bit, you know, doing what you can. And then suddenly you think, ah, I know what I want in the way of a garden. So 6 years later, we did actually redesign it. And since then, I felt it was my garden.
Wow. Now, Alexandra, as we're chatting here, a lot of people listening are in their cars driving to and from work. So I want to encourage all the drivers out there, don't try to take notes on your phone with your thumbs while you drive. I'll put all the links in the show notes on the blog at Back to My Garden. When you get there, make sure you follow Alexandra on social media. Her Twitter is at Midsize Garden. And you have to check out her blog. It's www.themiddlesizedgarden.co.uk. You chronicle your adventures and share pretty transparently, Alexandra. Did you have a goal of starting off as a blogger, or did, as you garden, you became a garden blogger?
I think it's much more the latter. I also teach blogging, and I'm a journalist and a writer anyway. So I'd been teaching blogging and sort of, you know, helping other people with their blogs. And then I thought, well, actually, I really need a blog of my own that isn't about blogging, because a lot of blogging teachers will run blogs about blogging. And in a sense, I felt that wasn't going to give me the experience that I needed to hand on to other bloggers. So I thought, well, I'll, you know, I'm absolutely passionate about gardening and I'd really like to do that. So I started the garden blog. And the other thing that I love about it as well is that because of things like Instagram, I can do the photography for it. And of course, before these phones and Instagram and things like that, really photography was for experts and I wasn't an expert, but it's been such a joy being able to sort of really photograph, you know, my garden, other people's gardens, you know, something pretty I see in the street, and put it out on both Instagram, Twitter, and in the blog.
Fantastic. I want to take you back to the first season of that garden you inherited. People who listen to this show love to hear about mistakes or things that went wrong. It makes the experts more human. Can you remember anything that didn't quite go according to plan that first season?
Well, I think I can safely say that really nothing went according to plan that first season. I really couldn't tell the difference between a sort of pumpkin that had grown out of the compost heap and was just, you know, was an F1 hybrid, which means a pumpkin that really hasn't got any taste and, you know, wasn't supposed to breed. And I thought it was a proper pumpkin and, you know, it was revolting when I tried it. I think the worst thing I ever did gardening was to pruning in the late evening and not noticing how dark it was getting. And I went on pruning and accidentally removed the whole of a very beautiful clematis. And I came down in the morning and there were all the flowers just sagging miserably.
A lot of listeners can definitely empathize with you. We've all been there. And as rookies, a lot of people still have that emotional attachment to their plants and their flowers.
Well, yes, I think the hardest thing for me to learn as a gardener, and I don't think I've properly learned it yet, is if something's not working, wrench it out or cut it back or change it. I always feel so kind of totally grateful that something's actually, you know, actually deigned to grow in my garden. And so it's really, you know, and yet sometimes things don't look good, or they are weeds, or they've self-seeded, or they've got too big. And, you know, so I still find I have to be quite tough about things.
Very, very good. I wanted to ask you about that, the emotional side, because some people garden just for the food or the exercise, but for some it's deeper, much, much deeper. What's gardening mean to you?
Well, I think that I first started it, what I felt was that it was a hobby that wasn't about writing, because as a writer, I then became a novelist. And of course, if you write novels as your hobby, but then when it becomes your work, because my novels are published, and so I suddenly, my hobby had become my work. And of course, gardening wasn't. It was a retreat and it was a place to sort of just let thoughts drift whichever way they want to go. And it's quite creative without being, you know, too technically demanding. So it's all about that space in my head. But of course, now that I've started being a garden blogger, I can see that my hobby is once again becoming a sort of job. So I think that probably happens to all writers, that whatever you start to write about then becomes the thing that you spend all your time doing.
Isn't it amazing how a deadline changes everything when you got a book due?
Yes, I mean, it's quite, because I've been a journalist for quite a long time, I'm very orientated towards deadlines. And what I find difficult is not having one. Because then it just sort of, it lapses. So I'm very keen on deadlines.
That's a good tip. There's a lot of people listening who say, oh, one day I'm going to write a book. So finding out, can you handle a deadline? If you crumble, it's do it the opposite way.
Well, what I would say for that is chunk it down. Give yourself, don't say, oh, I've got to write a book this year. Say something like, I've got to write the first chapter by Easter. And then I've got to get a third of the way through by the summer holiday. And if you sort of bring it all down to sort of much smaller bites, it's far less terrifying. Because, I mean, even I've had 9 novels published, and even for me to sit down and think I'm going to start a new novel is absolutely terrifying. So, you know, but sitting down and thinking, well, I'm just going to get started on the first bit of it is not as frightening.
Fantastic. And I know, well, we won't talk about all the secret stuff, but I know you might be working on a gardening book for next year, possibly.
Well, in fact, that's an interiors one. It's called Upcycled Chic. It's called Upcycle Chic and Modern Hacks, in fact. And what it's about is going to, you know, stuff that you get at things like rummage sales and what are called car boot fairs here, or buying things from a chain store and doing things to them, and so that they look a bit more special and a bit more individual. And so I've actually finished writing it now, and it'll be coming out in the spring.
Brilliant. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It must feel so good just to have it done.
Yes, although there's a funny sort of thing is that because, you know, and then the proofs come back and then something else comes back, and there's sort of never a point when you think, oh, it's done, until suddenly the book actually arrives. And then it often arrives quite unexpectedly. You know, there'll be a delivery at the door and you'll ring the door thinking, oh, I haven't bought anything. What's this? Oh, my goodness, it's my book. So that's always a really nice treat.
Nice. Now, Alexandra, I know a lot of the listeners are curious as to your own personal garden this season. I wanted to ask you, what was your garden like this year? What brought you joy and what gave you frustration?
This year has been fantastic with the flowers. Really, all the way through, I've absolutely loved it. At the moment, we've got dahlias. And with dahlias, I have this very red tree, which is called a Cotinus. And Cotinus grace is a sort of reddy gold, and it's at its best now. And the dahlias are a very deep red and an orange, and then there's a little bit of purple. So it's a very rich, sort of richer autumn palette out there. What has been really difficult this year, and this has been ever since I had raised beds, is that my vegetables have just got worse and worse. And, you know, at first I thought, 3 years ago, I thought, oh, well, you know, it's probably a bad summer. And now I just find that the more I find out about gardening, the less I know about growing vegetables. So I've really got to sort that somehow.
Have you ever done one of those little chemistry lab test kits for your soil in your beds?
Well, that I think I must do, because that is what everyone's saying to me. I thought for a bit of time that possibly a birch tree had got too tall, but birches are quite transparent. And everybody who's looked at it, because what I love is having, you know, fellow gardeners and gardening experts round for a cup of coffee or tea or a drink. And then I say, you know, we talk about it. And then, you know, the advice that I think anyone gets on that is just wonderful. So, you know, there's always a cluster of fellow gardeners saying, oh, well, and they're all saying, I think it's your soil. I think you've not really sorted your soil. So that's got to be on the checklist, the top of the checklist for 2015.
My wife and I had a big breakthrough on one of our beds. We have the 4x4 square foot garden style beds, and 3 little runty, stunty tomatoes that looked very unhappy, and a couple of zucchinis that only gave male flowers. Not one piece of fruit off. And you know how zucchinis are. You're running around in September giving them away.
Yeah.
And we did the soil test, and it was so acidy, and the nitrogen was so low it wouldn't even register, that it's no wonder these poor vegetables wouldn't. They were just so unhappy in this bed because the soil levels were way off.
Yeah. Oh, I think in that case, after this interview, I will go straight onto the internet and order one of those soil tests, because it does sound very like my experience. I mean, the courgettes this year, the zucchini, have been, I mean, as you say, one of them just male flowers, and two of them are just looking at me in this pathetic way as if I've been treating them badly, which, you know, probably I have, because I haven't given them what they really need.
My neighbor asked me if I was going to eat the flowers, and I go, what? And in Italy, they bread them and fry them, the courgette flowers.
I mean, here too, courgette flowers, stuffing courgette flowers is kind of a big thing in restaurants. But I kind of think it's a bit fiddly. I mean, I would love to think that I could gather up all my homegrown courgette flowers and stuff them with some delicious creamy pine nutty thing and then deep fry them. But, you know, it is definitely, I think, a little bit in the life is too short to stuff a mushroom category. So I think I'll continue to order them in restaurants.
That would make a great blog post title. Life is too short. Yeah. My wife's relatives are from Greece, and the old aunts still go out in the spring and harvest dandelion greens.
Oh. And
I feel kind of the same way. Like, you know, yeah. I know they're supposed to be good, but they, you know, they're dandelions.
Yes. Well, I always worry slightly. I think, well, could a dog have done something on them? And, you know, sort of might somebody have sprayed them with poison and they haven't quite died yet and you've got them at the time just before? And so I'm not very sort of, I mean, we do forage a bit around here. And of course, mushrooms are the big thing at the moment. And there are some friends who've got fields and they've got, say, damson trees and those old and crabapple and things like that, old trees that really aren't done commercially now. And so that's lovely to make sort of jams, gather those and make jams and things.
When we had our country property, there was a ring at my door, and my neighbor, he was in his 70s and retired, and he came to visit and he said, do you mind if I take your crab apples? And they were really, you know, only the birds might eat these crab apples. They were not great. Yeah. But he had a 100-year-old apple press, like the old wooden and milled iron, and he made his own homemade apple cider. And he would just go around the neighborhood getting crab apples to make this apple cider. And I always love the old ways of doing things.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yes. There's a big renovation in apple cider here in Britain at the moment. You know, that all the old cider orchards had really almost disappeared. And now people are bringing them back and really hunting down the heritage types and using the old presses and trying to get all the memories of the people who are just about to die off. And, you know, so it's, I think they're hoping to really revive all of that.
I love talking to people in England because we have BBC Canada over here. And most of the shows they show, you've probably had them for 5, 10, 15 years, like they're old reruns. And there's a show that we get about people living in Edwardian times on an Edwardian farm.
Ah,
and it's from the BBC or ITV, and it's, you know, actors, but they spend a year trying to raise chickens like they did in 1905.
Oh, yes, yes, I remember that. I didn't see it.
It's brilliant. And I realize, well, my gosh, we take so much for granted. Like, we can go to the store in our car and buy soil or mulch or seeds. Yeah. And they had to hook the horses up to an old wooden cart and go to the market. And it was very authentic. And I do like those old ways, though.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I want to change gears on you and ask you when you completely changed and made your garden your own. You said it took you 6 years.
Yes, it got to the point where kind of nothing was working, because if we planted something next to the remains of the old mature plant, then there sort of wasn't room for them. And my husband didn't really like mowing around lots of trees. There were lots of trees in the lawn. So we had an agreement that if I was prepared to have a lawn, or in fact, it's a lower lawn and upper lawn, two lawns that were absolutely free of any borders or trees or anything, so he could just go up and down, which would cut down his mowing, then I could have what I liked around the edge. So that was the agreement. And we got a friend of ours who's a trained horticulturalist who helped us design something where it was a sloping garden, and we've now terraced it. Mm. And so near the house, we've got a parterre, which is a four square literally just divided paths and lawn. And that reflects the architecture of the house, which is Georgian and has four rooms on each floor. So the idea is that the house and the garden very much reflect each other. And also we decided to have one huge, very sunny bed in front of the kitchen window, because that's something we can see all the time, because obviously we're only out in the garden in the summer months. So, and that's worked very well. That's, you know, that's the bed I do most of the planting on.
It sounds like there was quite a bit of planning and vision that went into this. It wasn't done spur of the moment or slapdash.
No, I think, I mean, even though we didn't pay for a garden designer, we did do it ourselves with our friend Matt Jackson. And my husband is a very good draftsman, so he drew all the plans out and everything. But even so, you still have to get landscapers in to move the earth and build the little low retaining brick walls and the paths and lay the paths and things. So it's still quite an investment. And I think it's just something you know, you really need to think about and talk about and really look at, because it's not the sort of amount of money you'd want to spend. You know, it's a one-off. You're not going to go back and do that again. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but it is much easier garden to garden now because of this business of there's two open lawns and a very, very large central bed, which is full of colour. And we've also retained about three or four very mature trees, which give it a sense of permanence.
I think the takeaway for the listeners is to be patient. You didn't do it your first season. You worked up to it, and then you did some planning. And I'm sure you had lots and lots of changes to the plan as you went.
Absolutely. And even while it was being put down, there was one bit where once it had been cleared, it looked a bit bigger. We sort of hadn't really expected this little sort of space to appear. We thought, well, do we make it a bed or something? And then I noticed everyone was walking to and fro. And I thought, no, it's a path, because that's where people want to tread. But I mean, one of the things I think is really important is about mature trees, because if a tree dies, or if you take it away, you know, it'll be 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, and you can't get that back ever. I mean, not in your lifetime. So I think that before anyone takes out any trees, they really need to look at whether you could perhaps shape it better, or cut it a little bit, you know, make it a bit less tall, or make it more airily pruned, because it's, you know, it was planted for a reason. And I think people are often quite shocked when they take down a tree in an urban environment and suddenly realize that they've got sort of 15 of their neighbors' windows looking at them.
Very good. I just glanced at the clock, Alexandra. Our time is moving quickly. And now is the time in the show when we play a game called Five Quick Questions.
Right.
This is your chance to share wisdom and experience and resources with novice gardeners. Are you ready to play?
Absolutely.
Question one, Alexandra, in your opinion, what do you think stops non-gardeners from even trying gardening?
I think they're worried that they will get things wrong and make mistakes, and that it will be sort of terminal, if you know what I mean. But of course, actually, if you make a mistake in gardening, something else will grow. It's very, very resilient. So I would say, don't worry about making mistakes. Just go for it.
Excellent. Good advice. Oh, speaking of advice, question two. What's the best gardening advice that you've ever received?
Well, I think the weed and mulch for the first year was excellent. The one other thing that I would add is I think it's quite good to get to know one type of plant well. And I got to know dahlias very well. And it meant I was confident with one kind of plant. And a friend of mine, you know, she does hydrangeas, and other people get very involved in tulips. And I think it's a really good way into gardening. It's not to start with all the plants in the world, because that's pretty scary, but to just think, right, this is one plant, and I'm really going to, you know, I'm going to get three or four different varieties, and I'm going to understand how it grows and so on. So I think that would be a good piece of advice.
I'm taking notes as you're sharing wisdom here, Alexandra, and I use a red pen on a yellow pad, and I have half a page now, and so I wrote down just weed and mulch the first year.
Yes, just weed and mulch the first year is certainly a good one.
I love that idea. Master and get confident with one kind of plant. And that won't happen in one season, will it? You'll need a few cracks at it.
Well, I think you would do. I mean, I took to dahlias really quickly. They had, they're strong enough to compete with what was the other mature shrubs in the area. They're very strong in colour, and I kind of just loved them. So I think the one plant is going to be something that when you put it in, you just think, and everybody goes, oh, wow, that's looking great. And you suddenly think, oh, I can garden after all. So I think getting to know one plant is quite immediate. You obviously get to know more and more about it, but I think it can be quite immediate.
It reminded me of a little story. We have a shrub called a hascap. It makes little purple juicy berries. And this was the first summer that we actually had a berry on the shrub. And I tasted it, and my wife says, no, I think it's still too green. It was a little tart. So we left it. 8 days later, the entire shrub is alive and moving and shaking. And I'm going, is there an animal in my shrub? And a flock of birds had come in and stripped every berry off of it.
Oh, my goodness,
and my wife said,
yes.
See, the birds know when the fruit's ripe.
I know.
And so now, for the first time, we have to go buy bird netting and figure out when to put it on. And But yeah. I had never had that challenge before because for two seasons there wasn't a berry on it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I find it very difficult to beat the birds. You know, they have one thing in their minds, and that's to get those berries. And I've got quite a lot on my mind, so I'm afraid they always beat me.
I understand. I look like a crazy. I go out in the lawn in my slippers yelling at birds like my neighbors must just wonder because you can't. It's a fight you just can't win.
No, you can't win it, no.
A question three. This is where we like to get resource recommendations. Can you recommend or suggest one or two websites that you like for gardeners?
Yes, you were particularly saying you wanted to encourage people who perhaps hadn't done a lot of gardening. Mm-hmm. And I think that here there is a website, which is a company website of a horticultural company here. It's called crocus.co.uk. And I think that's very easy to navigate. It's very colourful. It's got lots of information. And I think, you wouldn't need to order the plants from there to enjoy it. And there's a number of blogs here, and one I think that's quite good is Rooftop Veg Plot, which is a blog that comes from somebody who lives in the City of London and grows an allotment on their roof, which I think is very something very accessible. I think it's something that people could do really almost wherever they live, you know, if they've got a balcony or, you know, a very small backyard. I think that's quite inspiring.
Fantastic. And for those of you listening, I'll have those links up in the show notes so you don't have to write it down. Question four. Can you recommend a good gardening book that you like or you think is particularly useful?
Yes, I had a little thought about this one because I think gardening books are a bit like cookery books. You know, you always get one or two things from each one of them. And, you know, it's like, I don't know how many cookery books you have, but I've got thousands and I have about three recipes out of each. So in terms of an absolute all-time brilliant gardening book, I couldn't think of one. But once again, going back to somebody perhaps who might want to be starting gardening and doing something a bit special and different, but not too difficult. I think James Wong, I don't know if you have that book there, and I've got it, but it's called Homegrown Revolution. At least I think it's called Homegrown Revolution. I was hunting for my copy, and it's about all the plants you can grow, but quite easily, like goji berries, that actually cost quite a lot in the shops, you know. So you can grow your own ginger, for example, or and he's looking at plants that grow very well in a temperate climate because quite a lot of the oriental herbs do actually. So I thought that would be a fun one if anyone's just thinking, well, I'd like to grow something, but grow it a bit special, not just carrots. I'll grow my own goji berries, which cost a lot in the shops.
This is very good timing. We're doing garlic for the first time and it's garlic planting season now. So wish me luck.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I left my garlic planting too late a couple of years ago. And, you know, I got tiny little cloves. But I think if you're doing it now, then you should be in for nice fat cloves of garlic next year.
I have two varieties, a red one and the classic white one.
Yeah.
And I got it at a garden market from an Amish couple who has a booth set up and young. He was like 19, 20 years old and he's already a farmer.
Gosh.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for it. This is our first season, so we shall see. When do you generally harvest your garlic, like in May or June?
Well, because I planted mine late and I'd got a special one that you only plant in March, I didn't harvest it until about September. I wouldn't say it was a great success. I think I need to be a bit more focused about things like that. And also, as I say, my veg has been doing very badly. So I've got to buy that kit. And
you're quite a bit south in England, aren't you?
Yes, we are basically sort of almost northern France. And we have quite a microclimate. We're quite dry and often quite warm compared to even London, actually.
You know, everybody has this false image of London in their head from the fog and the cold, wet weather. And I guess that's all kind of, you know, Sherlock Holmes and Jack the Ripper type TV show stuff, because they were saying that London now has palm trees and strange weather. And yeah, it's everything's different.
Well, I think the thing is about fog is, of course, it was the fires. And when the Clean Air Act in 1950, I think it was about 1953, the Clean Air Act came in. And really, since then, there haven't been any of those terrible, terrible London fogs, which were actually smogs more than fogs. In my lifetime, I've never known one. But I remember my father talking about it. You know, it was so dangerous. If you walked out in the street, you wouldn't be able to see the difference between the pavement and the road, and people would be regularly killed. So I think that's been one huge, huge change. And the other thing is that the southeast of England has become very dry. And I don't know if that's climate change, but it is really dry. I mean, I'm really thrilled when it rains. It hasn't rained now since, I don't think I've seen rain for about 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Well, we will send you rainy thoughts along with our friends in Texas and Arizona and California, because they need rain badly, too.
Yes.
Question number 5. And this is a fun one. There's no right answer, and it's a two-parter. Alexandra, what is one unusual thing that you've been itching to experiment with in your garden, or what is something you would suggest for every gardener to try to grow next season?
Right. Yes, I had to sort of think about that. And I'm not sure. Now, what's the most extraordinary thing? Oh, I know what I really love doing is I love doing one, what I call what's that plant. And what's that plant is a plant that, and I always grow them from seed because you can't usually get them from nurseries, where somebody goes in and they say, what's that? And there's one that I've had a lot of success with, which is called Leonitis leonorum, or staircase plant. And it goes up to about 6 foot in a season. So it's a bit like a sunflower in that respect. But it has little orange thistles at the top. And then it's got them sort of halfway down the stem and then quarter of the way down the stems. So people just really don't know what they are. And they mix with dahlias very well. And they just self-seed and they seed really, really well. So something unusual that seeds well. And the one I've done this year, not so successfully, has been called Love Lies Bleeding, or I've forgotten the Latin name for it. But it's a very rich, dark red, and it has plumes that sort of just tumble over. And in fact, you can also eat it, although I haven't quite dared. So I would say grow one sort of really, really unusual thing. Go to the seed catalogues and find something really unusual. And you can have just such a lot of fun with it because everyone comes in and says, oh, what's that? You know.
I love it. So I wrote down play the what's that plant game and
yes.
Leonitis leonorum.
Leonitis, yes, it's Leonitis leonorum, nice. Or staircase plant. And I mean, in a temperate climate, that'll be fine. It's very easy to grow. Very easy to grow. Fantastic. Possibly the easiest thing I've ever tried to grow.
You've just tickled a lot of our listeners because they love the unusual or things that their neighbors don't have.
Yes.
And then you get the privilege and the pleasure of sharing it with your gardening friends the following season.
Exactly. And I mean, it's quite interesting to see how some what I call what's that plants suddenly become everywhere, because I remember Cerinthy. I don't know if you have Cerinthy with you, but it's a very pretty blue plant. And when I first discovered Cerinthy, it was when I first started gardening, and it was really unusual. And now I'm actually seeing it in beds in streets, you know, in planting, municipal planting. So it's amazing how quickly a plant goes from a what's that plant to a oh gosh that again plant. It's still very, very pretty.
For those of you listening along at home, make sure you follow Alexandra on Twitter at Midsize Garden. And please go to her blog and share her awesome blog on social media. It's www.themiddlesizedgarden.co.uk. Alexandra, you've been a brilliant guest. The time has flown by.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.
I want to give you the last word to our listeners. Do you have a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement for them on their gardening adventures?
Well, I just think give it a go. That's the thing. Don't worry about doing any awful damage because, you know, there's always another plant, there's always another seed, it grows back. So I just think, you know, go for it is what I'd say. And don't let worries stop you.
Fantastic. Alexandra, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for asking me.